The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Mr. Outdoors joins me, Greg Roberts at RogueWeather.com. Boy, that was a chilly overnight here, Greg. I had a little bit of ice on the windshield this morning. Not much, but definitely you can feel the switch finally flipping over to real fall, at least in the real world.
Any question, you know, that system came through, gave us some very welcome rain, some snow up in the mountains, but the cold air was still in place when skies cleared out last night. And in fact, I didn't think we were going to be able to see that really full super moon, which in this point in October, they call it the Hunter's Moon, which is really kind of a joke because it doesn't actually help hunters unless that is you're a poacher. because with the nights being that bright and moonlit, the deer and elk will go nocturnal. And when they were doing the Cascade Rifle elk season in October, we almost always had that October full moon align with the elk season. And, you know, we'd be up there in our elk camp, and we were camping in tents. And, you know, so we're really hearing what's going on in the woods around us. You could hear the elk up and moving around. They were moving around on the dark, and then the days are nice and sunny and warm, and you're trying to sneak up on elk, and it sounds like you're walking on cornflakes. And so that's why hunting success got so poor during that Cascade Rifle elk season. There was just too many combination of factors and a very short season to try and overcome them. And that honestly had a great deal to do with the season going back in November.
All right. I wanted to ask, and please don't laugh at me for even asking this question. Are you allowed to hunt at night, or is it only in daytime hours?
Yep, daylight hours only. There are windows right before and right after sundown, or, you know, when sun rises in the morning and then sunset in the evening, there are windows that what they're really trying to do is give people an opportunity when animals are going to be far more likely to be up and be around, but they also want safety to be a consideration. And so you're given shooting windows before the sun has come up, but you still can really see very well. You can identify what your target is, for example. But in pure pitch black darkness, where you would have to cast an artificial light to, you know, illuminate what you're shooting, that is definitely not allowed. The exceptions to that are predator hunting. Here in Oregon, you will be allowed to shoot, you know, for example, coyotes, bears, cougars, things that are legal for people to shoot at pretty much any time of the day, especially as they pose a threat to livestock.
Yeah, because what I was thinking is, I know that there's a more prevalence these days of night scopes, night vision, things like that.
Thermal scope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, no, the world has definitely turned, and, you know, it's kind of changed things for in terms of poachers and what they can use. Oregon, of course, like so many states, in fact, I think all states, you know, for big game hunting, you absolutely are not allowed to use thermals. You're not allowed to use a lot of different optics that are out there on the market. The difference to that is in areas where hogs are overrunning the landscape and doing serious damage, it's 24/7 on hogs, and you will see a lot of videos online of guys hunting hogs in the middle of the night because that's when they're most active using thermal sights.
Boy, and they are just amazing videos to watch that, and also realizing how much damage the wild, you know, the feral hogs end up doing to communities.
Yeah, and, you know, I am so thankful we have not seen them get established here in this area. There have been isolated pockets of populations of them. Powers area has had wild pigs for years. They escaped out of a farm over there. I forget exactly when it was, but they did establish a breeding population. Mm-hmm. But it never really became a big issue. And from time to time, up on the Green Springs, we have had wild hogs appear there that clearly came up out of California. Now, California has a huge issue with them. I don't know why we haven't seen that kind of thing happen here. Just like I don't know why we don't have elk in great numbers in the Siskiyou Mountains, because I drive all over the Siskiyous and I look at it, and what I see reminds me a lot of our areas around Butte Falls and Prospect, where we have elk, and yet we don't in the Siskiyous, and I don't understand why that is. And when it really comes right down to it, I'm not an elk, or I'm not a wild hog, so I really couldn't tell you why they just don't seem to find, in the case of the wild hogs, Southern Oregon to their liking, and in the case of elk, why, except for small herds, we just don't have prolific numbers of them in the Siskiyous. It's a mind blower to me.
Yeah, I'm not upset about that, because from what I understand, wild hogs are also dangerous, potentially dangerous to people.
They most definitely can be, and people do get attacked by them. And, you know, down in the Southwest, they've got another wild form of pig, the peccary, and peccaries will get after you too. And they all have tusks, and they use those things. Mm-hmm. And they're vicious animals. And a big full-grown wild boar, I don't know which I'd rather be attacked by, a bear or a wild boar, because they're equally as dangerous, and they can put life, they can put fatal injuries on somebody quickly.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it's good to know that. Hey, Greg, as far as what you would do this weekend, now that we are getting that kind of flick, I guess it's not going to be a great hunting weekend from the sounds, because it's still going to be relatively dry until, what, Sunday or not?
Yeah, actually, though, we are going to have much improved conditions over what we have been seeing, because mm-hmm. the rain and the snow for Wednesday and Thursday will definitely help dampen the woods down. And then Monday looks to be another great day to be out if you're a deer hunter. Mm-hmm. And I am going to get out at some point on Monday, just haven't decided where yet. So if you need a note from Epstein's mom to go get out and enjoy deer hunting, did I just age myself?
Yeah,
anyway,
I know.
If you need
I
a
know.
Note to get out and go deer hunting, Dr. Frankenputz will be more than happy to write a note saying you're sick.
All right. As far as fishing, where would you go right now?
Right now, pretty much anywhere in the lakes, because, you know, we've talked about this for years. The trout bite is on, and I've talked about this thing about the cast and blast. You deer hunt in the morning,
yep.
You deer hunt in the evening, and in between, you go throw a line in the water. No people doing that. They've actually told me they've been doing that, and they're having success, and that doesn't surprise me, because, you know, especially when we had that traditional trout opener at the end of April, everybody knows that trout fishing was great in the spring. I think it's equally as good or even better in the fall, because the fish certainly know what's coming, and they're really, you know, they're stocking up. They're eating as much as they can right now to get ready for the winter.
Greg Roberts with me, RogueWeather.com, the Outdoor Report this morning. And the other fishing question I have to do is the ODF&W press release. Are you on their list by chance?
I am, but I may have missed this one because my inbox just gets so full on stuff, honestly.
I completely understand.
And I had two major projects I had to get done this week, so which thankfully I accomplished both.
All right. Well, what I was bringing up there, ODF&W ended up putting out a release yesterday, and everyone's trumpeting this. Spots first salmon in Oregon's Klamath Basin in 112 years. And I'm sorry, I'm just not a very trusting guy. And the reason I bring this up is, you know, I had water testing done the Klamath is still running like chocolate milk in most of this. And all of a sudden, we have this one magic fish that manages to make it to a tributary, Clearwater. And ODF&W biologists or people from the state just happen to be there for the main event. You know, the guys to show up, and they're able to, you know, take an underwater video of it that was put up there. Of course, I don't know if it's stock photos or what, but it just strikes me as a little odd. Am I wrong to be so mistrusting of the?
It's interesting what ODF&W decides they're gonna put a lot of effort into.
Well, the thing is that it gets everything that comes out on news releases is reported uncritically on local media. So you just have that's going to happen.
It's the government information source that is empirical and can always be trusted.
Right.
My thought on this was I always expected there would definitely be some salmon get above where the dams had been on the Klamath. I wasn't surprised that that happened. I think the reason why they're trumpeting this, they are aware that there were a lot of people out there who didn't think this was a good idea, who thought it was a waste of money, that we're seeing the serious consequences of what they did with what they released, taking out the dams, and you just referred to it. So any glimmer that looks like good news and they can go, this was successful, this is why we took them out, they're going to seize on it. Here's what they're not going to seize on, though. There will be times coming ahead, and I am still positive about this, that those fish, ultimately, the Klamath is going to die. And it was already started while the dams were in. Taking the dams out isn't going to change that. The die has been cast. Too much has changed. You can't take out dams on the Klamath and expect it to be restored to the 1840s. Not in today's world. Not with what's going on. It's just the wrong period in time. And so, yes, some fish may make it
But will they reproduce? But will they reproduce, I guess, is the other question.
That's going to be the bigger issue. I didn't know that it was in Oregon that fish was seen. I know it was in Northern California above where the dams had been, and they claimed they found reds, meaning spawning beds, and they found the carcass of a spawned-out female. Okay, great. But here's the problem. There is now so much toxicity in the water that if the fish can't make it above where the dams had been and they try to start spawning where all that toxic sediment has settled into the river, they may lay their eggs, create their spawning beds called reds, and those eggs probably will not survive the environment that they're in, meaning the eggs are going to die. Ultimately, I think what happens here, with the Klamath, it's going to get really low. It's going to reach lethal levels because there is no way to further control that. And ultimately, this is all likely to go for naught. I don't expect it's ever going to magically restore salmon runs on the Klamath. But, there was also a big political decision made, and, I think it's probably more that political reaction and how that played out that this is what ODF and Cal Fish and Game are trying to jump on top of and go, see, we were right. Well, yeah, you're going to be right in
Whatever green shoot that could be promoted. Here's a green shoot of hope out of the midst of all the chocolate the chocolate brown polluted water.
Okay,
right,
that's a great analogy. You're standing there looking at complete devastation, whether it's from a volcanic eruption or really high intensity fire sweeping through, and all of a sudden you find this one tiny little green shoot. That's exactly what you've got here.
All right. Greg, I appreciate the take on it because I'm sorry to always be so cynical when I see official releases about the dam, but my cynicism, unfortunately, has been richly rewarded just about every time.
Yeah. So, hey, by the way, I don't know what you've got coming up, and I know we've got a hard break here to take, but I really did want to get into, you know, what happened yesterday with Great Shakeout, and I want to talk about this because I have talked to a couple people privately, and they were rather shocked at what I had to say because I told people the absolute truth that if the big one hits in our lifetime, what's waiting for us and why you ought to really be taking seriously your preparations for the big one, because when that thing happens, for the sheer scope and size of it, government ain't going to be there to help you, and especially not here in Medford and Grants Pass. And I really want to talk about that.
Okay, I'd like to talk about that too. I probably can't do it right now. Could we reschedule for maybe Monday at a different time? Would that work okay?
Yeah,
I'll talk to you off air about this.
We can definitely reschedule for Monday morning, because I think this is critical for people to hear, and especially now what we've seen go down in East Palestine, what we've seen go down with the hurricanes.
Yeah, I think we have to be smarter about this and understand that even if they wanted to come help us out on the West Coast, if there's something that big, we're going to be on our own for quite some time before the cavalry is able to make it in.
Here in Jackson and Josephine counties, because we're going to be cut off and isolated in every way that you can.
And the feds will mostly be busy. Well, they'll be busy with trying to save Portland and the bigger population areas. So we'll have to talk about that, frankly. I'll get in touch with you offline, or off air, rather, and we'll figure out something, okay? Right?
Sounds good, Bill.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Greg Roberts over at RogueWeather.com, keeping you up on all the outdoor news and views and all that good stuff. By the way, Outdoor Report is sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford. It's 7:30.
Just look at it.
This is the Bill Myers Show.
Delighted that you are here. We got a lot to talk about this morning, including Ron Smith joining me here. It's out in the green room. And we'll talk the candidacy for Josephine County Commissioner, position 3, I believe. And I'll be curious to hear what he has to say, because I've talked to Herman Bearchigger practically every week for a number of years, and it looks like 2025 is going to be, as the Chinese would say, may you live in interesting times. When it comes to the finances, interesting times could be on the way. And where do we head? Okay. 7:33, we'll catch up on the rest of the news. Bill London will have a report for you, and then Ron Smith. I was going to talk with Kevin Starrett. What about this DOD thing? I know it sounds more like a conspiracy theory Thursday topic, in which the DOD is talking about use of lethal force on civilians, and people have been sending me the story. I read the stories, too, same stories, too. And Kevin's looked into this, and we'll have a discussion about it on Friday. We'll also have a Diner 62 quiz. And I think Commissioner John West was going to check in, too, because the lawsuits are just flying. You know, it's very calm in Jackson County politics. Josephine County is just kind of like a boiling cauldron. Just something about it must be the phase of the moon, the hunter's moon there right now, okay? With so many people working and doing business.
Hi, I'm Charlene, owner of American Industrial Door, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
Ron Smith is joining me in studio. Ron, you actually made the drive. Good to see you this morning. He's running for Josephine County Commissioner, position 3. Welcome back. How you doing?
Well, thank you, Bill, for having me on your show. I always enjoy you. I listen to you all the time. I think you're the voice of reason. Not the other guy.
Yeah, talk to my wife. I'm just kidding. We know how that goes. Nobody ever agrees on everything, for sure. But, hey, there is a lot going on. These are highly contentious county commission races in Josephine County. There's a lot of drama. There's the recalls going on. There's all this kind of stuff. What would you, before we even get into some of your platform here, what do you think is driving so much of the drama that's happening this year? What is it about the Josephine County politics that is, like I said, it's like a boiling cauldron this year?
Well, Josephine County is a funny little county. It's primarily conservative. And what I like to tell people is give them a little education on how it goes into a conservative county like Josephine County. The Democrats cannot get a commissioner elected. They simply don't have enough votes. So what they end up doing is being the spoiler. So you got two Republicans, the Rhino and the real conservative. They'll throw all their votes to the Rhino to keep the good conservative out. That's all they are, spoilers. They're very upset because John is following his campaign promises to cut the fat in government. And so they're concerned about that. And
so that's driving the recall, in your opinion?
Well, in my opinion, that's what's driving the recall. John has lived up to his campaign promises to cut the fat in the government, and that's what he's doing. And I'm sorry, but the liberals are upset about it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's
my personal opinion.
All right. That's all right. It was just an opinion.
It's an opinion. Yeah,
everyone has one. Okay.
Thank God we have the First Amendment.
So now, when I was talking with Herman every week, and the way he has been explaining the reality of finance in Josephine, and to a lesser extent, Jackson County. Jackson County is a wealthier county overall.
Yes, by far.
And yeah, there's just no way of getting around this. And also has a higher basic tax rate than Josephine County does.
I do like to point out the difference between Josephine and Jackson County. I think Jackson County has 11 incorporated cities. They're twice as big, half as much federally controlled. With that tax base they have, they don't have the problems of funding their law enforcement. Josephine County's got two incorporated cities, almost 70% of the land there's no tax on.
And a lot of space to cover, too.
And a lot of space to cover, but we just don't have the tax base. Only 8.7% of the land in Josephine County is taxed at the full tax rate. 8.7%. Almost three-quarters of the land in Josephine County, there is no tax on. You can't say that about Jackson County.
No, indeed. And that, of course, makes it very difficult. And the tax base or the tax rate that is there is relatively small and held down.
Yeah.
By.
Well, we just gave the sheriff a taxing district, and we're really not sure. The rumors I'm hearing, it's not going to be enough. So I think the people in Josephine County are going to have to make a decision. How much are they willing to pay for law enforcement?
I was wondering if anybody's come complaining to you. I had Jeff and Debbie, friends of mine up in Joe County, ended up popping me. Is anybody talking about their property tax? Ours went up 19%. I said, well, you know, you did have a sheriff's levy, you know, go through here. And I'm thinking that might have something to do with it.
That's part of it. But the louder outcry I hear is my insurance on my homes.
Oh.
And I hear this from a lot of people. A lot of people don't understand it. That's Senate Bill 762 that is raising your insurance. That legislation will do absolutely nothing to curtail wildfire because it puts all the burden on the homeowners, none of the burden on the federal agencies where 90%
of the fires. Not on the agencies where the fires are coming from.
Where the fires start, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And given that, I can't help but think that this is, and I know it sounds very conspiratorial, it's like this is just, we don't want people living on rural land unless you're really, really wealthy and you don't care what the insurance costs.
Well, it's going to make it very difficult to develop in the rural parts of the county because of this so-called hazard map that they developed. If you're in a high-risk zone, it's going to be tougher to get permits because it's going to cost you more money. If your house, heaven forbid, were to burn down, you'll probably never be able to rebuild it.
What role can the county, with you on the commission, is there anything you can bring to bear on that in what way?
Well, I think the county commissioner statewide had made a good statement. They've already told the state this map is bogus, it's not realistic, it's not going to help any. And I think that's where we need to go as a commissioner. I don't think you're going to stand up against the state with one county. I think you're going to get a group of counties to say and push back and say, no, hell no. Mm-hmm. Go back to the drawing board and do something that really, really, really will reduce wildfire.
Now, they're going to have to get just as up in their face as they have on other issues like this.
Well, I think so, too. And you know what would be wonderful? I'd just love this if we could get this done. Repeal Senate Bill 100, because that is our big problem with land use in Oregon. We're a unique state in that no other state has statewide land use planning. We should turn that back to the counties where the people have more control, say so, locally.
Yeah, it would seem to me that the county commissions have a much better idea of how the land, if you're going to have anybody planning, it would seem to be the closer to the people would be a lot better. But you know what this has been all about? Essentially, Senate Bill 100 was about making it easy to implement sustainable development. You know, the United Nations Agenda 21. I mean, all these things that people said, oh, that's not true. These are all voluntary. You say, yeah, it's all voluntary until your state shoves it down your throat. Yeah. Now we have the climate-friendly, equitable community.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, and the 15-minute cities and all the things that go on with that baloney. But our real problem is that we've allowed, the American people have allowed over the last 100 years to take what used to be local control and allow that to slip away into the state and the feds' hands. What we need to do is figure out how to reverse that and bring that local control back to the people, to the government that they're most in touch with at the county level. And when the Founding Fathers set up this country, the strongest unit of government was the borough, the ward, or what we call a county. And we need to try to recapture that. Tough road to hoe, but I mean, if we don't, we're going to have more of this centralized planning and coming down on us.
Yeah, well, look at the commissions. Look at our local city councils, Grants Pass, Medford, and everything else. It's almost like all we're doing is, in essence, electing ribbon cutters is the term that I've used. And when I say ribbon cutters, all you're doing is implementing a huge state and federal regulatory morass on the people here. And all we're doing is arguing about, okay, what level of boot will we, or okay, what size of boot will we vote for to stomp on the people? That's where we find ourselves right now.
Yeah.
It's a tough spot but you get it though, right?
Yeah, I see it. I know that's reality. And it's really funny because I look at the conservatives and the Republicans and the people who believe in a constitutional America in their fight. And it seems like what we fight most of the time is we're fighting these liberal progressive policies that are in place. And so we spend most of our time on defense. Oh, they did this, so we got to do that. I like to see us go on the offense for a change. I really think we need to figure out how to shift and do the offensive game.
Yeah, well, how do you think you could maybe do a little bit more of that as a county commissioner? And I know it's just one position on three, but
Well, I think first of all, you got to be strong. If you're not strong, they're going to run you over because that's what's happened through the years. It's like true coordination at the federal level. Two federal laws require the feds to coordinate with the counties. Okay, for years and years and years, we wrote letters. They threw them in the garbage. They wrote letters. They threw them in the garbage. We still don't have true coordination when it comes to making a forest plan on a forest. And in Josephine County, that's a big issue because it's like 70% controlled by the feds. So I think we need to try to fight to get true coordination. And I think what we're going to end up having to do is sue them. But I have a book full of case histories where cities, counties, and states have fought the Fed on this coordination issue and won. It's a winnable lawsuit.
And what is the benefit of the coordination in Josephine County? How could that benefit the citizens?
Well, let's go back in history and see what happened to us. The Northwest Forest Plan in 1994, it absolutely devastated Washington, Oregon, and Northern California's rural economy. And we're still reeling from that. Here, take the spotted owl. It's going extinct because of the barbed owl. Now they're going to go send hunters out to kill the barbed owl. The government picking winners and losers. What it does for us is it gives us an equal footing. I would like to see us be able to get back in the woods. I know, tough road to hoe. People say we can't do it. But what is the future of Josephine County without that?
Aren't you really also barking up against the fact that there are no senators, on the West Coast, that are even willing to listen to someone like you bringing this up?
When we have a New York senator masquerading as an Oregon senator, that is a problem. And then when one of your senators comes from a logging family and he can't even see the benefit of reducing fuels in the forest, that's a problem. That's our huge hurdle, and I understand that. But we have to make people wake up to the realities that in Josephine County— we're going to have to struggle. We have to figure out how to be more business-friendly, how we're going to increase our tax base.
And what kind of businesses do you think are most primed to be, welcome to Josephine County as part of your economic development?
Well, I think a light manufacturing would be what we should shoot for because they usually pay good jobs. It's a business that people can go in and get trained on the job and do the job. An example maybe is Master Brands' cabinets. Unfortunate part about Master Brands is they don't use an Oregon product to build their products out. They ship the wood in from out of state.
Really?
But they do create a lot of jobs. Something like that. We have an industrial park in Merlin. It's only half full. We have a great opportunity with an industrial park or economic empowerment zone at the Illinois Valley Airport, which is a huge airport, a longer runway than Merlin. So those two areas, if we want to be business friendly, roll out the red carpet, give them some tax breaks, and actually actively go out and seek these types of businesses, we can bring some more tax base to the county.
Ron, there is a shift, I think, going on, and not just me has been noticing this, but with the internet, a lot of people that used to have to live in cities have been able to move more to areas like Southern Oregon.
Right.
As long as you have good internet connectivity and there's an ability to do those kind of jobs here, and you don't necessarily have to be in an urban hive mind like you used to be, having to go to Portland. Is there any goal or any push to maybe invite that you could see worthwhile in inviting more of these kind of individuals? And I guess you can call them laptop warriors, however you want to do it, but is there a way of maybe getting them to...
I think the county's always taken a huge step in that direction in their broadband. We got the biggest grant in the state for broadband development in Josephine County, and I think that's a viable way of bringing more people to Josephine County. Some businesses would be small businesses, mostly online, but those guys create jobs. They create an economy.
Yeah.
They would create more tax base, and so we're moving forward in that area, and I think that's a good way to go. I think Merlin Industrial Park is only half full, and the businesses are there are good businesses. There's room for more businesses.
Why do you think it's only half full?
Because I live right next to it. I see it.
I was saying, why do you think it's half full?
Oh, because we're not busy.
Yeah, I don't think it's half full because you're living next to it. So. they're trying to avoid Ron.
I look at it every day. But no, it's because we're not friendly enough. We're not friendly to business. I talked to a developer, and this is a guy who built a lot of developments. He says, I can develop a piece of property in Medford at the half the cost I can in Grants Pass. And why is that?
I would have said it was the opposite. I thought for sure it would have to be cheaper in Joe County.
No, he says Medford's easier to get along with. My permits are lower as a loss, and I at half the cost of what he can inside of Grants
Pass. And they complain about the cost here
Jackson County. It's extraordinarily bad in Grants Pass. This whole thing about urban growth boundaries kind of kills me because, it's a state is bounded and determined to make everything happen inside that urban growth boundary, which leaves rural Josephine County out in the cold.
Yeah. It's an awful lot of space with an awful lot of people still in there.
Oh, yeah.
That have to be taken care of. How do you think that ultimately, if you were elected at Josephine County Commission, by the way, I'm talking with Ron Smith, and voteronsmith.com is his website if you wanted to find out more about this. I can't believe I just had a little futz there. What was I just talking about there, Ron? I'm asking the person I just interviewed here. Okay.
About business development.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you about business. What aspect does the corporate activity tax weigh in the Merlin Industrial Park being maybe half full? Is there anything about that, or is that still too small?
I think what they're trying to do with this new tax they're passing is going to hinder all of Oregon. I think you're going to see business say, I'm leaving. And I think we already see that. Businesses are leaving Oregon. I was looking at the population of Grants Pass over the last 10 years. It's actually declined. The population of Grants Pass, the city of Grants Pass, has actually declined over the last 10 years. So you can't say we're courting people. People are beginning to see the homeless problem, how hard it is to develop a business, the price of housing, and they're saying, well, it's a beautiful area, but I'm going to go find someplace a little more friendly.
But as a county commission, you don't really have control of the city of Grants
Pass.
No,
we don't. And that's what people don't understand about jurisdictions. And we talk about the homeless. Well, unfortunately, as a commissioner, that's not inside my jurisdiction because the homeless problem is not out in the rural areas. It's in the city of Grants Pass.
Do you believe, though, that there could be a county solution of some sort that might be able to take the pressure off the city?
Well, I think there is, but I think the biggest thing, you got to understand that money that comes through for drug treatment goes through the Board of Commissioners. Mm-hmm. And that's really what most of those people that are homeless, they either got drug or mental health problems. There's a few people out there that are out of homes because the price of housing. I think a three-prong approach to the housing problem is the thing. We need more reasonably priced housing and apartment buildings in Grants Pass.
There's been some work on that.
There has. I know. There has, but we're still about 4,000, 5,000 housing units short of just the population we have. So we need more apartment buildings. We need better drug and alcohol treatment, and we need a stronger law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
That'll help reduce the problem. But you're really not going to solve these homeless problems until you undo the progressive liberal policies that caused them. Soft on crime, soft on drug pushers, open borders, defund the police. These kind of things are what's driving the homeless population.
And, of course, that's not something you have direct control of, even as
no, but
a county
you know,
commission.
One thing about being in office, you have a bully pulpit. And once you're in there, you can talk about these things and try to educate people. This is what I've done for years, is hold meetings to educate people about policies and laws and regulations that are going to be detrimental to their liberties and freedom. So I think that's what you bring to the table, even as a single commissioner not making decisions. You have a bully pulpit where you can talk and bring some educational information to the public about these different issues.
Commissioner Bearchecker, of course, on the way out, is not running for re-election. And we talk about a lot of the budgeting for 2025. And the way he describes it, that 2025, this is going to be for everybody, that it's interesting times once again, like I had mentioned earlier in here.
Yeah.
What do you see as the future of Josephine County, and how will you weather these potential? And well, it looks like it's almost going to be dead bang guaranteed economic storms in the next year or two. Probably inflation is just going to chew everybody up. It already is chewing people up.
I think part of the hope of most of the Republican conservatives is that Donald Trump become president and again cut those regulations across board, because that's really what spurred the economy. Just like everybody else, when they go to the grocery store or the gas station, they get sticker shock. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, now I can't afford to do this. I can't afford to do that. I have to have put food on the table and have my gas go back and forth to work. The same thing is going to happen to government. Government's going to have to find a way to work with less. And so, you know, people expecting services that were easy to get when we were flush of money may find those services harder to get.
A lot of this was pass-through money, or what we called the COVID money.
Yeah.
And the way Herman describes it is that, hey, that's gone. It's all gone,
it's gone at this point.
What about law enforcement? Because we remember the days that Joe – now, of course, this could be a better question for Sheriff Dave Daniel. But the fact of the matter is that the commission and the sheriff, you're all part of that, you know, that 1-2 punch, so to speak, here. Where do you see law enforcement? Because without – decent law enforcement, rule of law, and it's very difficult to get a handle on a lot of other these issues that you are talking about. People remember the days, what was it, about 10 years ago, that somebody calls 911, they're put on hold, you know, kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, I think we first must understand why we even established governments in the first place. If you look at the Declaration of Independence, it clearly states that the reason for government is public safety, of protecting life, liberty, and property. That's why we established law enforcement, to have a safe and orderly society. So I think it's got to be the first priority, and I just said it in the forum last night. Any government that can't provide for public safety, I see that they're a failing government, because that's really the first duty of government. So why is Josephine County having a hard time funding law enforcement? It's very simple. Government, the Northwest Forest Plan, federal government restrictions, the state restrictions. You know, these things, actually, our problem is just like a person living on the street. What are the words? I'm from the government. I'm here to help. We're sure of that, because now our state government and our federal government is actually hurting rural America. They're actually hurting rural America. That needs to stop. We need to figure out how to stop that hurt. And they're putting down unrealistic regulations and legislation on counties that just can't, like Josephine, can't afford to implement those things at that level.
What's an example of that?
Senate Bill 762 is a very good example of that. It's causing people not to come to our county. It's causing people to move away from our county. It will do nothing to reduce wildfires. And it just puts all the burden on the homeowner. And I've talked to dozens and dozens of people that have seen their home insurance skyrocket because of that legislation.
Or be eliminated entirely.
And that happened in California. And what happens when the insurance companies pull out, the Lords of London came in, now the states developed a high-risk pool. But if you can't get into that pool, you can't sell your home. Nobody wants to insure the loan. So we find it in.
What a great way to depopulate the rural lands.
Well, yeah.
And I don't know. You start wondering if that was actually the whole plan, because you can't help but notice that that progressive senators and state reps such as Jeff Golden and Pam Marsh were behind this.
Oh, yeah. They were 100% behind it. And if you look at old Jeff Goldenthal's, it's completely overgrown, but yet he was low risk on his property.
Fascinating.
It's a hypocritical thing. It's not designed to reduce wildfires. There's nothing in that legislation that's going to reduce wildfires. It's all placing unrealistic, hard burdens on property owners.
Well, then can the commission then partner more closely with our state representatives and senators?
Well, I think that's a big deal. I really hope that the conservatives get out and vote. You know, there's been a couple elections lately that we could have swung some very important seats in this state, but the conservatives left their ballots on the table. That's got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to get out and vote for it. You need to vote like your future depends on it, because it really does.
Yeah, I would agree with you wholeheartedly on that. Ron Smith, by the way, it is voteronsmith.com. Ron, before we wrap up here, how do you differentiate yourself from your opponent in this particular race? Because I know it's a nonpartisan race. You know, it's nonpartisan in Josephine County. That's BS, though. It's just the way, you know, partisanship is hidden.
I tell people, what a nonpartisan race really means is that it's an open primary and that all registered voters can vote. That's the only real nonpartisan part about it. Politics is partisan and always will be partisan. Me and my opponent are completely different. He likes taxes. Of course, he was rich, born with a silver spoon in his mouth and never had to worry about money in his life. So he kind of out of touch with the average person. But he was for this charter 100%.
Charter modification that went down.
Well, it's charter scrapping and redoing. But, yeah, I was 100% opposed to that. I don't see it necessary. He was for mass mandates and forced vaccines. I'm totally against that kind of stuff. He's part of the library board, and he's allowing these transgender and homosexual literature to be readily available for children. He calls that, if we took that out, he would call that banning books. I call that get them away from the children and protect the children from that kind of stuff. They need to be innocent children. Those are some of the differences between me and him. He's endorsed by the Democratic Party of Josephine County. I'm endorsed by the Republican Party. I'm endorsed by the Oregon Right to Life. He's not.
All right. So that's pretty much the choice that we have in position three, at least.
Night and day.
All right. 30-second, you know, elevator pitch here. Someone grabs you on.
I'm running as a people's commissioner. And the reason I say people's commissioner, I've been out there in the public for years, close to 25 years, holding meetings. Every time I see legislation that's detrimental to people, I hold a meeting and try to get people educated and informed. I've been out there talking to people, trying to get the heartbeat of Josephine County and see what the people's will is. Because as a commissioner, I want to work there to represent the people. You're there. It's a representative form of government. The reason I'm running is my wife and I live here. Most of our kids are in Josephine County. Most of our grandkids are in Josephine County. I'm running for their future because I see what's coming. If we don't stand up and push back and maintain some of our freedoms and liberties, our children are going to have a bleak future. And so that's my driving force, is to be out there to help defend our rights, protect our property rights, which is really under assault, protect our First Amendment, our Second Amendment, because without that Bill of Rights, we really don't have freedom. So there was a wise man said, if you don't have the right to own and control property, you are property. And I don't want to be property. I want to have freedom and liberty. So that's why I'm running.
Ron Smith, Josephine County Commissioner, Position 3. Good seeing you. Thanks for stopping by, okay? Thank you very much.
I'll see you.
Good talking with you. 3 minutes after 8, this is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.